Informing America's farmers and ranchers. This is AOA, produced by the American Ag Radio Network. Now, here's your host, Jesse Allen.
And thank you for joining us here today for another episode of AOA, Agriculture of America. Coffee cup is full. We are ready for some very good conversations here today on the show. We're talking ethanol and biofuels, markets, the pork industry, and much more here on today's program. I'm your host, Jesse Allen. Great to have you with us here. Today's show brought to you by Cenex. Every minute matters on the construction site and on the farm. Bulk diesel fuel storage can boost productivity and maximize ROI. Learn more at your local Cenex location or visit cenex.com for more information. Coming up on the show, we're going to talk markets with Ted Seifert from Zahner Ag Hedge in segment two. In segment three, the president of the National Pork Producers Council, Lori Stevermer from Minnesota, will join us. And at the end of the show, we're going to talk about ROI on the farm with Stephanie Zelenko, national agronomist with AgroLiquid. Joining us now to kick off the show, let's talk ethanol, biofuels, and more. Emily Score, CEO of Growth Energy, is with us here today. Emily, good to talk with you again. Thanks for joining us today.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Well, as we look at a number of different topics here today, Emily, let's start with E15. Obviously, we got the win there, the summertime waiver approved a few days back. And I know that was very welcomed by the industry and gives us some certainty here ahead of the summer driving season.
It's great news, and I love kicking off with good news. Yeah, so for the third year in a row, the Biden administration issued a waiver that lifts these very outdated restrictions on summer sales of fuel. And that means that consumers like you and me and everybody around the country gets to fuel up on E15 all summer. And I will tell you, I was in Minnesota driving around yesterday, and I saved over 30 cents when I filled up with E15, and it was fantastic. And as I go into the summer months and I'm going on driving trips with the family, can't wait. So this is great news, and we were anticipating this, but very good to have the decision out. And so now we have certainty, and the retailers have certainty as they're looking at the supply chain.
Well, that certainty important. Looking forward, though, getting a nationwide piece of legislation seems like that's kind of the next hurdle in front of us here to make E15 available year-round nationwide. Right, Emily?
It absolutely is. You know, we can't depend on an endless series of emergency waivers to keep E15 on the market year-round. Ultimately, what we need is a legislative fix. Really, for years, the only thing standing between American drivers and this certainty has been politics. We've got three different bills that have been introduced in Congress. We've got bipartisan support, bicameral support. So we as an industry are working very hard to try and get this across the finish line so we don't have to have this uncertainty and this exercise every spring. Are we going to get this? Are we going to be able to continue to have this access? And that's also what we need, that certainty to really allow this fuel choice to grow, for retailers to have the confidence to sell it and really maximize what they're offering in terms of fuel choices to their consumers.
I know there's a couple pieces of legislation that have been floated on Capitol Hill and introduced. Your thoughts, does it feel like one of those might be the solution? Is that something that we could maybe foresee getting through the House and the Senate here sometime this year, possibly?
Well, you know, most recently in the Senate, so you've had a bipartisan group of lawmakers. It was really led by Nebraska Senator Deb Fischer, introduced a bill. It's the Nationwide Consumer and Fuel Retailer Choice Act, and that had some compromises in it, and that allowed for us to have a little bit more support of that bill of kind of some traditional oil state senators. So that's the bill that I think is being discussed most right now. We still have to get it moved out of committee, and unfortunately, you know, politics are coming into play. But if you look at the fuel supply chain, the retailers, even many petroleum producers, they support this. They want uniform standards. They want to be able to have some certainty about what the fuel is that's going to be offered and being sold. And so we've got, you know, 95% of the fuel supply chain is supportive of this bill. We've just got a few more stakeholders that are dug in, and we've got to see if we can get them to come to the table and compromise as well.
We are talking with Growth Energy CEO Emily Score here today on AOA. Emily, let's turn our attention to sustainable aviation fuel. and tax credits, the GREET modeling. The word on the street is any day now we could get this this updated GREET model out from the different agencies in D.C. I was wondering if we would maybe see that here today as we speak right now. I have not seen that, though. What's the latest you're hearing in terms of this updated modeling for sustainable aviation fuel?
The word on the street is that we will get it out very soon. And, you know, I'm anticipating maybe next week we'll be able to see something out of the administration. And, you know, it's about time. The decision to support climate smart agriculture and American biofuel producers, it shouldn't require months and months of deliberation. Now, unfortunately, it has. I do think the delay is something that we will benefit from because it's given us additional time to educate people that really aren't familiar with agriculture about just how it works, how robust it is, how farmers can make changes, how we can verify changes and innovative farming practices, how you can trace it throughout the supply chain. So that's been the focus of our conversation. I think we should see something too soon, but that's not the end of the conversation because what we really need to see in very short order next is guidance on the Clean Fuel Production Tax Credit. That's the technology neutral tax credit. We call it the 45Z. We've got to get that out by the end of the year.
And I know with that too, I think some of this and some of the questions maybe from farmers is the carbon intensity scoring and how that's all going to play out. I know that's one of the many pieces of this overall puzzle, isn't it, Emily?
It is. And here's the thing. People are at a standstill. We have plants who are ready to do more innovation. We have growers who want to work with the ethanol plants and do look at things like cover crops or no-till, but nobody knows, all right, if I make these changes, what is the tax incentive going to look like? How much credit am I going to get? These investments require resources and finances and time and energy. And we've been very clear with the government. We want to be able to participate. We want to do more, but we can't do it unless we know the answers. And we know so we can make these financial risk calculations. So we've been very clear that we have an industry that is very excited to put steel in the ground to start making changes, but we cannot do it until the government gives us some answers.
Well, and it could be a multi-billion dollar boom for biofuels and for the agriculture industry. And any indication what the federal government's going to say here, Emily? Is it sound like it's going to be friendly? Are they taking their time here to get this right? Not to put you on the spot here as we wrap up, but what's kind of the indication, if any?
You know, I think it's going to be a step forward. The guidance we're looking for is for a sustainable aviation fuel specific tax credit. And how they treat this is going to give us a sense of what they're going to do with that bigger tax credit that I'm talking about that really is the critical one for the ethanol industry. I think there will be a recognition of climate smart agricultural practices. I think at a high level, the administration wants biofuels and ethanol and agriculture to participate as a feedstock in sustainable aviation fuel. So I think we have that support. And I think there will be recognition that, okay, if we can do these things on farm, we'll give you credit. But I think it'll be a step in the right direction, and we'll have to continue to move to get even greater clarity in that ultimate 45Z Clean Fuel Production Tax Credit.
Emily, great to talk with you again. Thanks for joining us on AOA today. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Jesse. Always a pleasure.
Emily Score with Growth Energy here on AOA. Up next, Ted Seifert with Zahner Ag Hedge. We'll be back with more brought to you by Cenex right after this. Every Tuesday, we're sitting around the table, sponsored by CHS, where we'll be talking with folks from throughout the cooperative system. Join us as we discover what makes cooperatives unique when there are more options to do business than ever before. We'll learn how farmers and ranchers like you benefit from a system where decisions are made by the members that own it. Tune in every Tuesday for Around the Table, or visit cooperativeownership.com to learn more.
If you miss an episode of AOA, you can listen back to the show anytime. Just search for Agriculture of America on your podcast platform of choice, and you can hear past episodes of the program on demand.
Make sure to subscribe to the Market Talk YouTube channel. You can watch our latest interviews with top market analysts in the country, find bonus content, and much more. It's easy. Just go to youtube.com/@MarketTalkAg and hit the subscribe button. Or you can search for Market Talk Ag on YouTube.
Non-attorney paid spokesperson. Could your house go into foreclosure? Are you behind on your mortgage payments? Does it seem like the bank has no interest in helping you save your home, and you feel like you have nowhere to turn for help? Then we have good news for you. Foreclosure Protection Services can help save your home, as they specialize in foreclosure assistance. That's all they do. If you're behind on your mortgage payments, being threatened with foreclosure, have been denied a loan modification, or been the victim of a predatory loan, it's critical that you call Foreclosure Protection Services now at 800-926-1701. Their network of attorneys and their agents are available to speak to you now. If you're behind on your mortgage payments, Foreclosure Protection Services can help stop the foreclosure process. Call today before it's too late. New laws are in effect that may save your home. Call Foreclosure Protection Services now at 800-926-1701. 800-926-1701. That's 800-926-1701.
Don't you wish your life came with a warning app?
Stop. That dog does not want to be petted.
Just a little heads up before something bad happens.
Move your coffee cup away from your computer.
Oh, no.
So you can have more control.
Stop. You're texting your boss by mistake.
Uh-oh. Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. With early diagnosis and a few healthy changes like managing your weight, getting active, stopping smoking, and eating healthier, you can stop prediabetes before it leads to type 2 diabetes. It's easy to learn your risk. Take the 1-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org.
Warning, the cap is loose on that ketchup.
Ugh. Don't wait. You have the power to change the outcome. Visit doihaveprediabetes.org today. That's doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
Informing America's farmers and ranchers, AOA. Now back to Jesse Allen.
And welcome back to AOA, brought to you by Cenex. As a farmer, unpredictability is inevitable. Protect equipment with Cenex Premium Diesel to keep you in the field. Learn more at your nearest Cenex location or visit Cenex.com for details. Joining us now, talking markets, Ted Seifried with Zahner Ag Hedge. Ted, welcome back to the show, buddy. How are you?
I'm doing great, Jesse. Thanks for having me, man. You know I always like to do it.
Yeah, well, we appreciate it when we could get you on the show. And I know... You heard the tail end of Emily's comments there from segment one, Emily's score from Growth Energy, and looking at ethanol and this sustainable aviation fuel discussion and this GREET modeling. And, you know, there's a lot of industry talk. There's a lot of talk amongst traders, I know, in terms of what this could look like potentially for the ag industry. Ted, you have some thoughts on that, it sounds like?
Yeah, absolutely, Jesse. I'm pretty outspoken when it comes to the subject of ethanol. And you know, I love listening to Emily and you know, all the ethanol advocates are, you know, I like listening to what they have to say. I do think there's a very big missed opportunity there. And I like to remind them about that as often as possible. But first I'll talk about the sustainable aviation factor. And, you know, we look at this in agriculture as the next big wave of demand that we're going to get that's really going to save us from the trend that we're moving towards overproduction and sort of demand, at least especially for soybeans, that's starting to falter in the form of our exports. So we need this new injection of demand. The only problem is, and the thing that you don't hear a lot of people talk about, is that when we create more fuel from biomass, when we create fuel from corn, when we create fuel from soybeans, there is a byproduct, right? We have soybean meal in the case of soybeans, and we have DDGs in the case of corn. So when we talk about this big new demand influx coming in, we also have to understand that it kind of cannibalizes another category of demand for both of those things, right? If we are crushing soybeans to the tune of another 400 million bushels or so, well, we're also creating a whole lot more meal. And that meal is going to compete with corn as far as feed is concerned. But it also means that we're going to, when we talk about the export market, we're going to have to export more meal. We're not going to be able to use domestically as much meal. Mm-hmm. So we're going to have to export more meal, which means we're going to have to take Argentina to task. But then if Argentina loses some of their typical customers on soybean meal, what are they going to do? They're going to export more raw soybeans, and that comes at the expense of our soybean export program. So there's a lot of offsetting factors here. And again, it's not one for one. Look, new demand, it will undoubtedly create new demand for both corn and soybeans. But the numbers that are being touted, I don't think are thoroughly thought through, because there is some demand displacement that occurs. So that's my story on sustainable aviation. But when I say there was a missed opportunity for the ethanol industry, I've been talking about this for a long time. It's E85, Jesse. We should have pushed E85 really hard. And why? Because I've shown with three different cars, by the way, that and it's not just me. I mean, this is something gearheads do this all over the country. Flex fuel, we call it flex, right? By using E85, it's a cooler burning fuel, which means you can run a higher compression, which means you can get more horsepower. And if you do it correctly with the right fuel air mixture, you don't lose gas mileage in a big, big way. Flex fuel vehicles lose gas mileage when they run E85 in a big way, because they don't have a sensor in the gas tank to tell the computer, the car's computer, to lean out the fuel mixture, add more air, because you don't need to burn as much E85 as you do regular 87 or 93 octane, whatever you're running. So by doing that, you get a lot more horsepower. In fact, in 2003, Dodge put out one of their Challenger Demons. It's called the 170. That thing was pushing 1,025 horsepower. That's incredible. I mean, that's one of the highest horsepower production cars we've ever seen in this country. But when it was running 93 octane, it was only producing 900 horsepower. You get an extra 125 horsepower by running E85, right? There is proven time and time again, if you like performance cars, E85 is the way to go. So what I've been saying to the ethanol advocates and anybody who will listen, and I really think we need to bang down the doors of the car makers, because here's what needs to happen, right? Or here's the missed opportunity that we have. If you go to any of the car makers that are running a 2.0 liter turbocharged engine, that is the most common engine on the road right now, right? A turbocharged four-cylinder engine. That's prime for E85, because anything that's forced induction, turbocharger, supercharger, that's where that higher compression ratio really helps out and really adds horsepower. So go to Mercedes-Benz, go to BMW, go to Chevy, go to Ford, the EcoBoost, you know, the EcoBoost Mustang, for example, and say, hey, guys, offer a sport package that gives you an extra 20 horsepower when your customers are running E85. Charge them $1,400. Those guys will eat it up, because hey, you know anybody buying a sports sedan wants a little extra horsepower, right? And a sports package, a cheap sports package to get more horsepower by running 85, all of a sudden you've created this huge new category of consumers of E85, and wow, that's gangbusters. You know, E15 is great. E30 is going to be the next big fight. I don't think we should be doing this incrementally, Jesse. I think there's a major missed opportunity. I don't know why the car manufacturers, aside from, you know, big oil, you know, dissuading them from doing so, but I don't know why the car manufacturers wouldn't look at this as an awesome opportunity for themselves, because they can charge, again, that 2023 Dodge Challenger that was running E85, they put a $20,000 price increase on that car versus the regular SRT Demon or Hellcat.
Yeah.
Just because it ran E85. I mean, these guys could charge $4,000 for something that cost them $600 to do.
Sure.
It's a huge profit margin for them. It would really increase, really, really increase our E85 consumption. And all of a sudden, we are not making enough ethanol to satisfy that demand. So look, in my mind, that was the opportunity. I think it's still there, although the focus is really shifted a lot more to hybrids, and especially in the performance world, the focus has shifted more to the hybrids and things like that. We can still do it, but man, you know, go back 5-10 years ago, this would have been the thing to push, in my mind.
This is what I love about this show, is open, honest conversations about things. And so I'm I hear what you're saying, Ted. And I think that's just, it's all part of this conversation that's gotta continue surrounding, surrounding all the different opportunities and where we go and, you know, demand and demand destruction and unintended consequences, everything. All right. So I appreciate the thoughts. Well, we've killed a bunch of time in this segment. You're good, buddy. No, that's what I mean. I love the open and honest stuff here. Let's a couple quick notes real quick. Wheat market continuing to rally, short covering weather concerns. It's kind of trying to drag quarter beans higher, but maybe being met with some farmers selling. I guess, you know, give us your 90 seconds here on the grain markets right now.
Different sets of weather fundamentals are happening right now, Jesse. Wheat has some dry areas here, you know, Kansas, but also, you know, look to the Black Sea area, Russia, Ukraine. There are a number of major wheat producers in the world that are experiencing adverse weather conditions. So that's causing short covering in wheat. Open interest has been coming down. So really, this is a covering event to this point. It's not really new buying coming into the market. And as of today, we've got July Chicago wheat running right into its 200-day moving average, which we've not traded above, well, really, in the life of the contract. So this is a major, major level of resistance. You also have the December, pretty much the entire month of December, we traded a range between where we are right now and about 658. So you've got about 30 cents of just very major resistance here. This could be about the extent of it, but it's a weather market, Jesse, and it's a short covering event. So you can't really predict when that ends because you can't really predict when the weather changes. I will say this, wheat is, it's the cat of agriculture. You can kill it 9 times and it still keeps producing. Look at the yields or look at the conditions that we had in our winter wheat crop last year. And then look at the yields that we ended up with. It's pretty amazing. And again, you know, our winter wheat conditions dropped 5% unexpectedly, although I think we should have been expecting it. I had a 3% decline. Mm-hmm. Either way, big decline for our crop, winter wheat crop that we saw Monday afternoon, but it's still so much better than it was last year. Year over year conditions are so much better for this crop right now. So I don't know. Short covering events happen. Wheat is notorious for this sort of thing. But right now you're running into major technical resistance, and that might be a big problem or a major hurdle for wheat at this point. So it's been fun. It's been great. Now, row crops have not really been following along because now we're focused on our just Midwest, you know, our Corn Belt weather. Yep. And while there is going to be a lot of rain here this weekend, we're talking about planting delays. Most of the areas that are going to be getting rain really needed it. So I think ultimately it's going to be a good thing. If we can get this crop in the ground, we're going to be starting with much better subsoil moisture than we did last year.
We're up against the clock, buddy. So thank you. This is Ted Seibert with us on AOA. We'll be back with more right after this.
Paid non-attorney spokesperson. Are you over the age of 60 and been diagnosed with lung cancer? If so, you and your family may qualify for a cash award. Our experienced attorneys are standing by to evaluate whether you have a lung cancer claim that qualifies you for a cash award. The consultation is absolutely free, and there is no risk and no money out of pocket. We only receive a fee when we secure you and your family a settlement. 250,000 people are diagnosed with lung cancer every year. You're not alone in this battle. We can help make sure that you and your family are financially safe and that medical expenses are covered. Again, if you've been diagnosed with lung cancer and are over age 60, call now. Don't delay. There are deadlines for filing claims. We're standing by 24/7. Call us at 1-844-903-1744. 1-844-903-1744. That's 1-844-903-1744. Attorney Advertising. William Stephacker Jr. is the attorney responsible for this ad. Main office, Granton, Pennsylvania. May not be available in all states.
You're listening to AOA. I'm Jody Heemstra with this check in agricultural market information from the American Ag Network. For corn in the U.S., demand remains solid on the export front, with export sales of 51.1 million bushels last week and shipments of a hefty 66.9 million bushels. That turned out to be a marketing year high. Corn commitments of 1.81 billion bushels so far, compared to just 1.5 billion bushels at this time a year ago. It would appear U.S. corn export sales are on a path that could be as much as 50 million bushels higher than the current USDA projection. On the domestic front, ethanol production slipped another 3% last week and has now fallen 11% in the past 3 weeks. That's on weaker margins and yearly maintenance downtime. In soybeans, Brazil continues to dominate world trade, and rumors had China buying another 5 to 6 cargoes of Brazil beans. That was on Thursday because of weakness. The Brazil harvest is nearing the latter stages, while Argentina's soy harvest has reached 26%, but that is half of the 5-year average pace, that due to the amount of rain in that area. Argentina will soon emerge as the world's number one soy meal seller, that as U.S. soy meal demand is set to weaken following the record pace of sales due to last year's Argentine drought. For wheat, U.S. hard winter wheat areas got some precipitation, including very dry western Kansas, but much of the storm tracks look to be too far north to bring much relief. Early Friday, storms were covering eastern Oklahoma and part of southeast Kansas. There is more rain to come, and there is still a chance that hard winter wheat areas may get some decent drought relief. However, wheat experiencing some form of drought rose to 30% last week from 24% the week before. And that's a check at some agricultural market information from the American Ag Network. I'm Jody Heemstra.
What I know about courage, I learned from my adoptive mom. She said sometimes you just gotta hold on and know we'll get through this.
Mom, we are so high up. Hold my hand.
No, you hold my hand.
Here we go.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more.
I learned patience from my adoptive dad. All he had to say was,
"Hey, you got this. Just breathe." Hey, hey, we're pretty good.
Yeah.
Might have to start a band.
I got it.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Informing America's farmers and ranchers, AOA. Now back to Jesse Allen.
Yeah, thanks for sticking with us here on AOA today, brought to you by Cenex. After long days in the field, equipment is subject to wear. Cenex premium lubricants help keep equipment protected. Learn more at cenex.com. Thanks to Ted Seifert from Zahner Agheads joining us there in the last segment. Sorry to Ted. I had to cut him off there at the end of the segment as we were up against the clock. Ted gets fired up about ethanol, but it was a great discussion, and I love discussions like that here on the show for sure. Those open, honest, and sometimes uncomfortable discussions, but always enjoy those and appreciate him being on with us here today. One news note, I wanted to share this real fast before we get to our next guest. Colombia has restricted U.S. beef imports over bird flu from the 8 states that have tested, dairy herds have tested positive for bird flu. And that was announced here by the USDA yesterday, and that's a story that we're going to continue to watch. Colombia, not a big importer of U.S. beef, but it's still something that warrants watching here as this HPAI dairy cattle situation continues to unfold. And as of today, no U.S. beef cattle have tested positive for bird flu. So I just wanted to share that news headline here, something we're going to continue to watch. All right, well, let's turn our attention to the pork industry. Happy to have on the show with us here today. She is the president of the National Pork Producers Council, Lori Stevermer from Minnesota. Lori, thanks for joining us on AOA today. How are you?
I am doing well. Good morning, Jesse, and thank you for having me.
Well, I appreciate it. And we have plenty to discuss and talk about here in terms of what's happening with the pork industry. I know NPPC just had their spring legislative action conference. Give us a quick rundown of some of the different things you guys talked about during that conference in Washington, D.C.
Sure, happy to do so. We were out in D.C. 2 weeks ago. We had about 100 producers out there, and it was really a great experience, a chance for our farmers to go out and share their experiences from their farms with legislators. And, you know, really a few issues that we're focused on. First of all, the Farm Bill, important to get that passed. For a number of reasons. We're also, trade continues to be very important for our industry, very much an economic driver in terms of the value of our pigs. And then also just concerned with labor and the availability of labor. So I would say those three are probably some of the bigger issues that we were talking about.
Well, let's break a few of those down. And I want to start with ag labor. I'm glad you brought that up, because that is definitely a wide-ranging issue that I know in talks with many farmers in different segments of agriculture, it's a problem. It's an issue that we can't necessarily find enough ag labor here in the U.S. right now, whether we're talking crops, livestock, et cetera. What are some of your thoughts on the ag labor situation right now?
Well, you're absolutely right in that it doesn't just affect pork. It affects a number of different labor industries in agriculture. And, you know, when we're in the rural area, we're already having low unemployment, you know, lower than average. So many of our farms use TN labor, and so there's been some challenges with denials of those TN applications, and so that's the type of feedback that we're getting. And those are skilled workers, and they're working in our sow farms. So, you know, we had conversations with staff from the White House and also with the State Department to help them understand how important those workers are to our farms and the value that they provide.
Is it something that I know we've tried to have some meaningful reform to things like the H-2A program and ag labor in general and immigration? I know it kind of gets tied up in this. I mean, any indication from some of those conversations you guys had, could we potentially see some meaningful reform to our ag labor guest worker programs here in the U.S. in sometime in the not too distant future?
Well, you mentioned H-2A reform, and that's, you know, something we've been advocating for also, to make sure that those workers can stay year round. And it is overall a complex issue with labor. As you alluded to, it tends to get wrapped up in immigration and some of the other emotional issues that people have. But I think it's important that all of us continue to bring this issue forward to our representatives and to continue to have that discussion. Because if we don't continue to talk about the challenges that we have for labor and then the needs that we have, whether that's H-2A visa reform or OTNs, I'm afraid it'll get overlooked and just get put on the back burner.
We're talking with Lori Stevemer, the president of the National Pork Producers Council, here today on AOA. Lori, let's talk about some of those other issues you raised. Farm bill, and I think maybe tied in with the farm bill is Prop 12. I know that's, of course, a big issue in the pork industry. There's been some talk of a legislative fix to the Prop 12 issue in California. Question 3 is out there, Massachusetts, of course. Are those some of the things that NPPC is looking for in terms of maybe getting included in a farm bill?
Absolutely. You know, Prop 12 is an issue that we've dealt with really my whole time on the board, and I got on the board in 2019. So it's been a very critical issue for our industry, and there is discussions happening right now. We know that G.T. Thompson has said there will be a federal solution in the farm bill, and so we want to make sure that those discussions still continue to happen. Producers that I talk to are concerned about that patchwork of regulations. You know, you mentioned Q3 in Massachusetts along with Prop 12, and they certainly don't want another state with another different type of regulation. So once again, one of those issues we're hopeful, continue to have conversations, and really just need to be ready for that when the farm bill does happen.
Well, I know some lawmakers have pointed out how pork prices in California, for instance, have jumped up here since Prop 12 was enacted. And I know, to your point, the patchwork of, you know, different regulations, it just, I feel like outside looking in here a little bit, obviously I'm not a pork producer, but, you know, in talking with pork producers and talking with yourself, I mean, it just seems like it creates a lot of confusion when we have these different patchworks of regulations out there. It just seems like it's not beneficial to the pork industry at all.
It's not. And I want to touch on something you alluded to. You know, one of our concerns with all these regulations was that it would increase the price of pork. And we are seeing that now in California. From a study that the Office of the Economist did with the USDA, that did show pork prices are on average up 20%. You know, some cuts like loin are up almost 40%. So we are seeing food prices, or pork prices, excuse me, increase in California. We're also seeing consumer demand, or the volume being sold, decreasing. So 20% down in volume sold. To me, that's concerning. In a nation that talks about food availability and food affordability, when we have a wholesome, lean, affordable protein like pork that isn't getting to the people that want it, and we know California is a great supporter, eater of pork, that's concerning, because as farmers, you know, we understand there's regulations. We're okay with some regulations, but, you know, a couple excess regulations with, you know, the challenging economics we've been through over the last 18, 20 months, that makes it hard for farmers to do what they really love to do, and that's produce pork for consumers.
Well, we're talking interstate trade. Let's talk global trade a little bit here. I know pork continues to show some very strong export numbers here. We have a lot of great trading partners around the globe for U.S. pork. Your thoughts on trade and some of the current export environment for U.S. pork right now?
Trade has been our bright spot in exports. We're up last year. We exported about $8.1 billion worth of pork. So, you know, that adds about $64 of value to the carcass. So it's significant. About 26% of our pork is exported. You know, we send a lot of pork to Mexico. That's our number one destination for pork. Also countries like Japan, China, Canada, South Korea, in the Dominican Republic. So we're always looking for areas to expand our trade in. We know that, you know, it has been kind of challenging. We're not doing a lot of free trade agreements. So we're looking at ways to expand. You know, one thing that we did talk about in D.C. was the value of AGOA. That's the agreement that we have with South Africa, and it's up for renewal. And so we want to make sure that we get market access as AGOA is renewed, because once again, while we appreciate our big markets like Mexico or China or South Korea, we really need to expand our basket of countries that we sell to and look for those opportunities across the world.
Lori, great stuff. Real quick, we got about a minute here. I mentioned at the top of the segment just that news on the beef side. Of course, we're watching HPAI in dairy cattle. Your thoughts, obviously, the pork industry, very good with biosecurity. We're not seeing this in hogs, but obviously I'd have to think biosecurity right now is a top of mind issue in the pork industry as well.
You know, it is, but I think for all of us in agriculture, no matter what sector we're in, we need to remind consumers this is not a food safety issue. So our food is safe. And then second of all, as the pork industry, that's why biosecurity is important to us. We've got our pigs indoors, you know, in many of our facilities, we're showering in, we're showering out. I think it also brings to light the value of the traceability program that our producers voted in, mandatory traceability guidelines that we've submitted to USDA, so that should we break with something like a foreign animal disease and our trading partners are wanting to know where it is and where it isn't, that we have those traceability plans in place. So a lot of factors, happy to be part of them.
Lori, great conversation. Thank you for joining us on AOA. We'll have you back on the show again real soon. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
Lori Stevermer, the president of the National Pork Producers Council. Learn more, nppc.org. We'll talk with Stephanie Zelenko from AgroLiquid coming up after this on AOA, brought to you by CEDEX.
Now. We tend not to think about now. We dream about tomorrow, relive yesterday. But sometimes we don't see what's right in front of us. Victory over cancer is in front of us. Right now, cancer research is saving lives. Cancer research, funded by the V Foundation, is leading to new discoveries and new treatments, and ultimately, one day, victory over cancer. Give to the V Foundation. Right now, one out of every two men and one out of every three women will get cancer in their lifetime. Now is your moment. You may save someone you love. 100% of your donation goes directly to game-changing research. 100%. Donate at v.org. Because today's cancer research is tomorrow's victory.
Don't give up. Don't ever give up.
In Iraq, our truck hit a roadside bomb. I had about 16 surgeries on my hand so that I could regain function. And when I came home, I needed a new roof due to a storm. And my electrical was deemed unsafe. And I was about to lose homeowner's insurance as well. I didn't really know where to go in order to get help. And so I applied for Operation Homefront Critical Financial Assistance Program. They've really been a blessing. Operation Homefront is a safety net. A lot of veterans, they fall through the cracks sometimes. And Operation Homefront, they catch us. It's been a blessing to us. It's a blessing to other veteran families. And it's good to know that when we come home, there are people who are there that care about us and want to see us do well and want to see us succeed. And we feel it and we appreciate that. I would say you guys are angels behind closed doors.
Visit OperationHomefront.org to learn more.
This is Around the Table, where we explore the benefits of cooperative ownership. Today, we're talking about distracted driving with Lisa Kahns, a traffic safety and advocacy director for the Minnesota Safety Council, and Taylor Kipples, transportation safety specialist with CHS. Lisa, what is distracted driving and why do people need to be concerned about it?
We are right in the middle of Distracted Driving Awareness Month throughout the nation, and so it's so important to be focusing on the task at hand, which is driving. So it doesn't matter if you're behind the wheel of a vehicle, or if you're behind the wheel of a piece of machinery, it's very important to have your brain in the game, your eyes on the road, and your hands on the wheel. In our state, unfortunately, thousands of crashes are due to distracted driving. And unfortunately, nationwide, over 3,500 people lost their lives last year.
Taylor, how does CHS address distracted driving?
At CHS, safety is one of our core values. We strive to put the well-being of our people, customers, communities first every day. CHS is one of the largest private fleets in America. We have 32,000 commercial motor vehicles, as well as drivers covering approximately 100 million miles each year. We provide CHS transportation drivers with safety trainings. These trainings include guidance on how to eliminate distractions while driving, as well as how to drive defensively, so our drivers are equipped to protect themselves against distracted drivers.
Lisa, how could farmers and ranchers avoid distractions while they are driving?
Let's think about driving as behind the wheel of a vehicle or behind the wheel of a piece of equipment. It's important to use and forbid cell phone use. Really keep engaged in the task at hand. And that's the same with ATVs and tractors. Another thing is develop and implement safety zones. There's places within what you're doing in your business that are just unsafe with many different pieces of potentially hazardous equipment and materials. So develop a safety zone where phones can be used.
We've been talking with Lisa Kahns from the Minnesota Safety Council and Taylor Kipples from CHS here on Around the Table. Learn more about the benefits of cooperative ownership at cooperativeownership.com.
Every day, our brave military men and women, along with their families, make tremendous sacrifices for our freedom. Patriotic Hearts, a nonprofit organization, is dedicated to supporting these heroes and their families in their times of need. By donating your unwanted card to Patriotic Hearts, you'll be supporting job transition and job fair programs, veteran entrepreneurship, counseling, and retreats for combat veterans and their spouses. Call 800-560-3870. You'll receive a tax deduction, and we'll arrange a free pickup at your convenience. Imagine the difference you can make in the lives of those who have given so much for our country. Your car donation will directly impact military families, veterans, providing them with the support they desperately need. Call 800-560-3870. You can become a part of something bigger. Join us in our mission to uplift and honor our military community. Call 800-560-3870 to donate your unwanted card.
Information America's farmers and ranchers need. AOA. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
And welcome back to AOA, brought to you by Cenex. Every minute matters on the construction site and on the farm. Bulk diesel fuel storage can boost productivity and maximize ROI. Learn more at your local Cenex location or visit cenex.com for more information. Well, speaking of maximizing ROI, we want to talk about that on the farm. Joining us for that conversation, she is the National Agronomist for AgroLiquid. Stephanie Zelenko is with us here today on AOA. Stephanie, thanks for joining us. Hope you're doing well.
I am. Thank you for having me.
Well, we know commodity prices have been dropping back. Farmers are really looking at their bottom line. They're looking at all their various inputs because a lot of input costs haven't necessarily gone down with commodity prices. So they're looking at different ways to not only maximize profitability, but maximize their yield on their acres. So just kind of set this up as we're looking at the overall landscape here, Stephanie, and thinking about our ROI and understanding it. And talk about, from your perspective with AgroLiquid, some of the things that you're hearing from farmers that they need to consider right now.
Well, we're going into one of those years that we don't like to see in agriculture, you know, higher interest rates, higher inputs, lower commodity prices. And so that makes our decision making a little bit more challenging. And that's really where that ROI, that return on investment, has to come into play, because we have less dollars there to kind of play with to remain profitable. And so AgroLiquid does a lot of work with our products, and, you know, just our agronomic advice that we offer to people is, you know, look at what those input costs are and make those decisions on, you know, what that anticipated return is going to be. And so it can be a little bit challenging if you don't know, you know, all those different parameters, but, you know, we have a lot of resources out there that you can work with in the industry to get that information and help you make those good decisions.
Well, from your agronomist perspective, you know, thinking about a year ahead where there's got to be some decisions to look at that ROI, is now a good time to stick with the basics that we know and trust? Or should this be the time where we maybe look to try some new things? What are your thoughts there?
Well, I think just in general, the only way you're going to grow your operation is if you're trying new things. You know, it's not wise to try a lot of new things in one year. And, you know, when we have, you know, less dollars to play with in our overall fertilizer budget or our budget in general, you know, we don't want to get too creative and go too much out of that box. But I always suggest, you know, try things new on your farm, but do them one or two items at a time. So pick something that is very interesting to you. You know, there's lots of information that comes out via social media nowadays, but we're constantly getting new information. Pick one thing that interests you, do that as a test on your farm, and then tie those economics back to it. Because even if it's profitable for somebody else, it may not be profitable for you. So you want to test it and make sure it works well for your operation as well.
Well, and obviously, I mean, crop nutrition is key, of course. I mean, that's what we're all working towards, is making sure we have a healthy crop out there. And what are some stats? I think I saw some notes from you guys about 16-22% of growers anticipated income typically goes to their crop fertility program. Is that number right?
Yeah, that's correct. You know, that's a pretty big range there, 16-22%. I usually calculate about 20%, okay. Especially when we're dealing with a corn crop. You know, soybeans and some of those other specialty crops might be a little bit different. But specifically for a corn crop, about 20% of what you anticipate to get as far as income is what you're going to spend on your fertilizer budget. And, you know, a lot of guys are surprised that they don't think about that number, but when they do the math backwards, you know, it is kind of falling really close to that percentage. But that's a good guideline when you're looking at building that fertility program, you know, in the fall or even this time of year of, you know, what do you think you're going to sell that corn for? What's your average yield that you get on your acres? And then, you know, multiply by 20% and figure out how many dollars you should be spending. And if you have a little bit extra, that's your opportunity to try some of those new things to see if you can get some additional bushels out of them.
Well, and thinking about if you're trying any of those new things, to your point about doing some small scale type testing, because we really want to avoid costly mistakes, especially at a tighter budget year like the one we have in front of us. Right, Stephanie?
Right. And, you know, doing those small tests are good ways to get information for you right away. But then do it in good years and bad years, because every year is going to be a little bit different. We know our environment changes from year to year, but we also know those economics change from year to year. And so, you know, having those dollars, you can even, you know, say if corn's going to go up 50 cents next year, you can tie that, you know, back in with current data and make good decisions, you know, going forward.
Well, and I'm glad you mentioned the word data. I feel like using data on our operations has become so crucial and so abundant now that it really can be a huge driver of a lot of our decisions. How is using data on the farm really shaped a lot of producers' decisions from what you've seen from AgroLiquid's perspective?
It's amazing, you know, now that we have so much technology out there, you know, every piece of equipment we're running across the field has some way to collect data in that. And from the fertility standpoint, it's making it a lot easier. Before you know you have good parts of the field and bad parts of the field, but now we can go back and pinpoint those points, do a soil test, do a tissue test in season, and then figure out, you know, why it may not be as successful as other parts of the field, or those good parts, what makes them good. And that allows the agronomist with AgroLiquid then to look at that soil test and then help you build a fertility program that can make that whole field producing just as well as those good spots.
Well, as we're getting ready, obviously, for the heart of spring planting season, any thoughts from you as we kind of wrap up here that farmers need to think about as well, or anything you want to reiterate to folks as they're finalizing some of those plans here for planting season and throughout the growing season for that matter, Stephanie?
The biggest thing I tell guys this time of year, you know, because they probably have their planter program and their basic fertility program already set. And we're staying pretty conservative just due to the markets that we are in. But keep open the option for in-season applications. There's lots of tools now with Y-drop and side dress applications, foliar treatments that if we have a season that, you know, starts pushing those yields, you know, higher than we anticipate, then we have that flexibility and that option to go in with some additional nutrients and add some additional yield there later in the season.
Well, I've enjoyed the conversation with that national agronomist for AgroLiquid, Stephanie Zelenko. Stephanie, thanks for joining us on the program today. Really appreciate it. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you for having me.
Once again, good stuff there, good thoughts. Stephanie Zelenko with AgroLiquid joining us here today on AOA, brought to you by Cenex. As a farmer, unpredictability is inevitable. Protect equipment with Cenex Premium Diesel to keep you in the field. Learn more at your nearest Cenex location or visit Cenex.com for more details. We're out of time. Thanks for joining us. I'm Jesse Allen. Have a great rest of your day. When news happens in agriculture, or when the markets are moving, we've got you covered as your trusted voice in agriculture. The team at the American Ag Network has the knowledge and experience to keep you informed on the issues impacting farmers and ranchers. We've got you covered on air, online, and on demand. Find the American Ag Network on your favorite social media platforms, and also follow the American Ag Today podcast wherever you get your podcasts. We are the American Ag Network.
Make sure to subscribe to the Market Talk YouTube channel. You can watch our latest interviews with top market analysts in the country, find bonus content, and much more. It's easy. Just go to youtube.com/@MarketTalkAg and hit the subscribe button. Or you can search for Market Talk Ag on YouTube.
Get the latest bonus interviews, exclusive content, and more with the American Ag Today podcast. Just search for American Ag Today and give us a follow wherever you get your podcasts.
If you're caring for one of the 16 million Americans living with chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, you probably have many questions. COPD makes it harder to breathe and worsens over time. As a caregiver, you may juggle many roles. Being connected to the right resources can help. That's why the Learn More, Breathe Better program and Respiratory Health Association created the COPD Caregivers Toolkit. This free toolkit will help you better understand the disease, prepare for doctor's appointments, navigate home life changes, help after a COPD flare-up, and stay mentally and physically healthy through it all. Help your loved one live better with COPD. Visit nhlbi.nih.gov/COPD-caregivers.